Welcome to No Room for Phonies, episode 109. So that seems pretty crazy, but that's what it is.
We're continuing our series on books worth reading.
Yes.
And today's title is
Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance by Angela Duckworth, who is pretty famous for her work on grit.
Yep.
And she kind of starts out by saying that no matter what area of life, the highly successful person has a ferocious determination that plays out in two ways. First, they're resilient and hardworking. And second, they know in a very, very deep way what it is they want. So they not only had determination, they had perseverance that made high achievers special. And she calls that grit. And she says talent is no guarantee of grit. Our potential is one thing, and what we do with it is another.
I know it wasn't in this book, but I remember an example once of somebody whose IQ was like super high, like 150 or higher, and had all sorts of money in his family, like his parents and
right.
all that they, and he still, and he was talented, and he still ended up on the street.
Yeah, and we often,
as an alcoholic, like he didn't have any.
Yeah, and we often talk about that in terms of like, when I worked with gifted kids,
yeah,
they, you know, really high IQs and all kinds of things, however, didn't really accomplish anything because they just didn't
have the grit.
And I mean, it's the same. So what we eventually accomplish depends more on our passion and perseverance than whatever is our innate talent. So She gives a lot of stories and examples in the book again. Like there's examples of like highly trained soldiers like at West Point and like that sort of stuff. But she gives there's a lot of story to her book.
Nice.
But I mean, basically she's saying you have to challenge yourself every day. When you get knocked down, you get back up and you take a calculated risk and then you sleep at night. Like you just do. You don't ever stop. Ferocious determination, resilient and hardworking. They know deeply what they want. They have a specific direction. So passion and perseverance equals grit to her.
Okay.
So.
Go on. Sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead.
No, I'm just wondering, does she talk a lot about like teaching grit to people, or is
yes,
it something
she
that,
does talk
that
about
parent,
it
that parents do that teachers can do?
Yeah, it. She does talk about how to encourage, like outliers demonstrate unusual ability in combination with exceptional zeal and capacity for hard labor. So they're hardworking, and these are the kind of people that easily notice things that escape attention and observe them. And they keep thinking about the same question long after other people have moved on to a different
interesting
problem. So yeah. They're kind of, a different breed of people. But when you see that in kids or people, you can encourage it, right? Mm-hmm. You can let people think about things.
Well, sometimes though we think we encourage people to follow the mass or to follow the crowd.
Yeah.
And the ones that stay stuck on something, we say, oh, they're a little bit obsessed or OCD.
Right, yes.
They're over-focused.
Right.
Where maybe they're thinking through things.
She says when we shine a spotlight on talent, we can risk inadvertently sending the message that other things don't matter. Mm. So we have an unconscious kind of bias toward
talent.
Someone being talent. Greatness is many, many individual feats and each one of them doable. So anybody can, talent, effort, skill, and achievement fit together. So talent times effort
equals
skill. And skill times effort equals achievement. So if you're talented in a certain way, your skills will really improve as you increase the effort. Mm-hmm. So, but you still need to put in like that 1,000 hours or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, they've said that that's now a myth, but
Well, it's still, but whatever. But you still need to put time into it. Mm-hmm. And achievement is what happens when you take your acquired skills and use them.
Interesting.
So an effort builds skills, and effort makes skills productive. And to do anything well, you have to extend yourself. And then, you know, it's that idea that you have to stay true to whatever you've committed yourself to, even if you're not comfortable
all the time.
Right.
I think it's interesting. This part focuses so much on effort
when
it's so easy to get tired and want to quit.
Right. And you see that right in little kids. They start.
But I'm thinking of adults too. Like you can put some effort in for quite a while and then you kind of feel like you're pushing the rock up the hill and it's rolling back.
Right.
And you might want
to quit. But I always said, like, kids came to school in September so enthusiastic to go to kindergarten, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're so excited. And then by Thanksgiving, they're like, what is happening to me? I still am coming to kindergarten. Like, there's like an implementation dip kind of a thing to life sometimes. And she talks about the fact that enthusiasm is common, but endurance is rare.
Interesting.
So that, you know, kind of explains. And passion equals sustained, enduring devotion. And passion is a compass. So it kind of takes you a time to build and tinker with and then get it right, and guiding you on a long, winding road to where you want to be. So follow your passion. Mm-hmm. But I think people think that, oh, if I follow my passion, then it's just going to be easy. If you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life. And that's not true.
No.
In her, like, no, in what she's explaining.
You still have to put in effort and you have to have, you know, endurance in the things.
If you want to get something out of life, you have to like endure it and do it. And so grit is about holding the same top level goal for a very long time. And success comes as much from deciding what to do as from deciding what not to do.
Interesting.
And her three words are improvise, adapt, and overcome. And I mean, you know, in education, I think because things change kind of all the time, if you're not, you know, doing those three things, improvising, adapting, and overcoming, you probably won't make, like, you won't make it
as a successful educator.
No. Yeah. So, yeah, it's just interesting. And she talks about the maturity principle, that over time we learn life lessons we don't forget and we adapt in response to the growing demands of circumstances. But we do that with maturity. Mm-hmm. And like I always think about Richard Rohr when he talks about what mature religion is. It is like learning life lessons and, you know, and adapting in response to circumstances and understanding culture and what is really important and
interesting,
casting aside some of those, what I call religiosity, right? Of rule following.
Well, some of it is that immature. You've learned up to a stage and then you get stuck.
Yeah. And the idea that my way or whatever it is that I know or do or whatever is the best. Mm-hmm. And kind of not being open to anything else. So maturity is about, you know, really learning your life lessons and growing from that, right?
Well, I think through our lives at different stages, like, in our 30s, we grew some and then we kind of, life's busyness, whatever.
We
might have plateaued for a little
while.
We had
tough 30s, right? Because we lost parents. And we bought a house. It was expensive, for us to live.
So it was a lot of...
Not like it is now, but it was.
It was a lot of hard times, but we were persevering and putting in effort.
But when you think about that whole idea of holding on to the same top-level goal, which was being able to provide, you know, enriching experiences for our kids and for them to, you know, be able to, you know, have a different life than what we had growing up, right?
And then our vows to each other that we would attempt to love each other to overflowing.
So, I mean, I think our grit, what we hung on to was that whole idea of creating a different kind of marriage and family than how we had grown up.
Right. But remember, we wanted to fill our cups with love, but with the overflowing, we wanted to reach around to our immediate circle of people that we could.
Right. And I mean, I think it's like, certainly it's easier for me to do that now because I'm not working, so I have time.
Oh, but you did it at your job.
Mm-hmm. For sure. For sure. So she says, the stages of grit, number one is like, are you interested in it? Do you enjoy it? And then number two is your capacity to practice trying to improve and resisting complacency. And then the third stage is understanding the purpose, believing that your work matters to yourself and others. And then four is hope, is rising to the occasion, kind of perseverance, that idea of keeping going when things are difficult. So you really have to open your soul and spirit to what it is you're trying to do, like what that big overarching kind of moral purpose, goal, whatever.
And I don't think it always has to be lofty, thinking of that book that you just read about things to do every day or whatever.
No.
But I'm thinking like along the lines of somebody learning how to knit.
Right.
You know, they get inspired, they get all excited, and then you hit the drudgery of 50 rows of the same thing. And, you know,
well, the discussions that I've had with people when they say, oh, I'd love to learn to knit. And I tell the story of
what you
like
did.
Garter stitching, like 200
stitches, three big blankets, 200,
like the size, knitting blankets the size of a queen bed or double bed, and doing like two of them.
And all you did was the knit stitch.
Knit. But I got my tension sorted and, you know, so. Nobody wants to do that. They want to make the cute little
fast things.
And see, to me, that's a perfect example of grit. I wanted to be able to. The overall goal was to be able to knit nice things. And now I knit socks and whatever. But then I had to get through that, right? And you just had to do it. It says passion is a little bit of discovery followed by a lot of development and a lifetime of deepening.
Interesting. So... interesting for the perspective of like young people thinking that they want to follow their passions in life.
But
this is something like your passion will grow as you age.
Well, and I think sometimes we're in a sort of a society where we just flip from passion to passion instead of really deepening what we're doing.
The quick fix or the quick experience.
And again, she talks about becoming curious. The old in the new is what, you know, kind of claims attention, and continuous improvement is part of grit. Excel beyond your remarkable level of expertise. And it's like a persistent desire to do better. It's a positive state of mind. It's looking forward, wanting to grow. And she talks about the 10,000 hours, but like 10 years of deliberate practice, like really being willing to invest time in it, right? And then there's a whole section in there on what is practice. Like set a stretch goal, a goal that stretches you. And I always think of like being in the zone of proximal development where you where you are, you're okay, like, but you're not completely comfortable.
Right.
But you have everything you need to kind of get to the next
thing. And you're competent, but you're not excelling at it. Yeah.
And looking for feedback and self-regulating and being deliberate. So that's where practice. That's what practice is about. Like, can you think of that? Okay, if you're a swimmer or something, and you know, or a runner, and you want to hit your speed, you're looking for somebody to give you feedback, and you're regulating how you're doing, and you're being deliberate in whatever strategies you're using to be able to run faster or swim faster or bake better or whatever it is,
It is,
even down to like raising your children better, right? Like, I know that that's a, maybe whatever, but maybe your goal is to be more like listen more to your kids or like, you know.
Right,
or,
it can be a smaller.
No. So, and then she talks about flow. Flow is a state of complete concentration that leads to a feeling of spontaneity. So, flow is like performing at high levels of challenge and yet everything just feels effortless. And like you don't have to think about it. You're kind of just doing it. So, and I think we've all kind of been in that state of flow at times, mm-hmm. right? Where you're just kind of, I feel that way sometimes on my bike.
Yeah.
Where I'm just pedaling and pedaling and, you know, I'm challenging myself to go faster and faster and whatever, but there's a moment there where it just feels effortless because mm-hmm. you're in the flow of, and gritty people do more deliberate practice and experience more flow. So the more deliberate practice you do, the more flow, and deliberate practice is for preparation and flow is for performance.
Interesting.
So deliberate practice is where you have a clearly defined stretch goal, full concentration and effort, immediate and informative feedback, repetition with reflection and refinement. You focus on your weaknesses. You concentrate 100% and it's a habit for you. Like you just, mm-hmm. it's kind of like, I don't want to.
Well, I really feel like my efforts now with yoga,
mm-hmm. I'm
feeling like this. Mm-hmm. Because of the mornings I don't want to, that's okay. I still concentrate, make a deliberate yeah. choice to get up and do
right.
it. And I've seen small progress as I go.
Yeah. No, and I mean, I feel the
not
same.
Not as fast as I'd like it to be.
No, but I mean, that's where, you know, you focus on your weaknesses, you reflect, you refine, you, mm-hmm. you keep going, mm-hmm. you know, and I mean, purpose is the intention to contribute to the well-being of others. What we do matters to someone other than ourselves. So there's a moral imperative to it. And I think there is a more moral imperative to being well,
absolutely.
To being as healthy as you can be. Like for me, sometimes I see people who are just accepting of the fact that as they get older, they're not going to be as mobile. They're not going to be able to. And I mean, all the books I'm reading, like this current one I'm reading, which I think we should talk about
okay.
sometime, is called it's called Built to Move. Mm. And it actually talks about the vital things that you need to do to keep your body strong.
Well, just
so
think
that
of
you
Dick
can
Van Dyke.
Move.
I mean, yeah. he's 99 now, I think.
Yeah.
And he's still moving.
But his hip flexors are working.
Oh yeah.
But I'm just saying, like,
well, and I think there's value in doing that, like the bigger purpose is to do it for your loved ones. So
yes.
So that you're here
but that's
longer.
That is a moral, right. Because there's plenty of things that can grab us, as we know, that we can't prevent. Mm-hmm. So if you can do as much as you can so that even if something does grab you, you have this health, you know, other kind of health.
You have a better chance at surviving mm-hmm. because
right.
of that.
Yeah. Because of it. But you know, I just think like the number one thing in this book is that you have to be able to get off the floor, and you were doing like you're good at it. But the idea that you have to be able to stand up off the floor without using your hands. And mm-hmm. I mean, he does this cross-legged thing where you sit and stand with yourself and you can do it.
Yep.
But there's also hip flexors and mm-hmm. breathing. Which I feel bad sometimes because I don't think our senior citizen population has ever been taught to breathe.
Yeah.
And I think it, like if I was working in a nursing home now, mm-hmm. that's what I would do for people. I would like help them learn that kind of breathing.
That deeper breathing and upright.
Like yeah. that kind of stuff, because I think it would be so mm-hmm. good for them. It feels weird at times mm-hmm. and in my fitness thing, she'll say her kids laugh at her because of the way she breathes, right? But who cares, right?
Absolutely. More important.
How you see your work is more important than your job title. And then you need to play an active role in developing and deepening your interests. How does what you do connect to other people, the big picture? How can it be an expression of your value? You know, whatever you do as your work. Mm-hmm. Like I often think of like our kids when they do their work, they do their work well, but they do it for the purpose of communicating with people and making sure that people are clear and understand the they actually have that. I don't know if they would articulate it that way, but they do have, I think they do. And when we really need to stop and breathe and fully connect with our lived experience. And that's the whole mindfulness thing that we've talked about. And the idea that you can make a difference and see what's possible, and that whole thing about making the world a better place, right? Like that's always a deal. And Charles is wearing headphones today so that our sound is better this time, just so you know.
Just so I can catch myself fading in and out.
Yeah. So, and then she says, hope is about falling 7 and rising 8.
What does that mean?
If you fall down 7 times.
Oh, and you get up.
Okay. Our own efforts can improve our future. And then that kind of Maya Angelou thing is, I resolve to be better tomorrow than I was today. Mm-hmm. And it isn't suffering that leads to hopelessness. It's suffering you think you can't control, which I thought is interesting, right?
Wow. Yeah.
Like when you start feeling things are out of control, that makes you feel hopeless, right? Yeah. When you feel there's nothing you can do. Mm-hmm. So you have to, the optimism can be learned, and suffering is temporary and specific and not usually not permanent and not pervasive. Mm-hmm. But you know, when you keep searching for ways to change your situation for the better, then you have a better chance of finding them. And you know, you hear about, well, I know even when we went through your cancer diagnosis and everything, if we had felt that it was hopeless, but you're always kind of looking for, and even in your recovery, right? Yeah. You continue to look for, how can I improve this or get this to work better or things to go better? It's mm-hmm. the same mm-hmm. kind of a deal.
Yeah. Oh, that's why I'm doing yoga, because they said don't lift weights for 8 weeks, but I started doing little bits of weightlifting and the tug in my abdomen was still too frightening for me. I didn't want a hernia. So
yeah.
I really took a break, but yoga was the thing that stopped kind of the pain in my abdomen. I stretched things out.
Yeah, and
the so book. Now I feel ready to be able to do weightlifting.
Yes. And the growth mindset, she talks a lot about this. And it mixed in all this is stories, right? I'm just pulling out kind of the main. Life is about challenging yourself and learning to do what you couldn't do before. Language is one way to cultivate hope. People get better at things, they grow. And I mean, her thing about grit is that hard work really does matter. And we can't overreact to failing. Step back, analyze, learn, stay optimistic. When does struggle lead to hope? You know, when you experience mastery at the same time as adversity.
Right.
Like, which is pretty much life. Like the good with the bad, it all happens mm-hmm. at the same time, and
mistakes happen while you
in
whatever it is that you're trying to do.
And hopefully you work and live in an environment where that's okay.
Not always,
sometimes you don't. I mean, I didn't work in an environment where it was okay. People were treated badly for trying, risking, and then trying things and them not working out. Mm-hmm. And if you know, there was no space for any of that kind of stuff.
It was all just criticism.
Yeah. And a growth, my optimistic self talk. How do you bring forth interest, practice, purpose, and hope in the people you care for? So she talks, she does a whole kind of chapter on children carrying within themselves the seeds of their own future.
That's a great analogy.
Isn't it? Right? And their own interests will emerge if we trust them. Mm. So teach your children to live by clear principles and moral guidelines, and explain your reasoning and make them know the boundaries. So very practical, tough and loving, pressure and support, wise parenting, warm, respectful and demanding, high standards, know the extent of the comfort zone and manufacture situations which are slightly outside of it, which is what the zone, right? Proximal mm-hmm. development. Go past those negative beliefs in what's possible and impossible, and just get your kids to give it a try. And, you know, encourage that sort of thing, like do hard things that interest you and experience both challenge and fun, you know, kind of at the same
time.
time. Yeah. And I, you know, I think of, you know, situations where, you know, one of the things I think about sometimes is Zachary playing soccer, right? Mm-hmm. And that was, he had fun at times,
yeah,
but, you know, it was very challenging for him, but he stuck it out, right? Yeah. And that mm-hmm. was grit.
Yeah.
So.
And the thing I never could get my head around is him being goalie.
Yeah.
And sticking it out.
I know.
Getting booed when he left the goalie.
Yeah.
And yeah.
But he stuck it out. Mm-hmm. And I think it probably has helped develop his ability to kind of have a thicker skin and let, yeah. you know. And, you know, follow through purposeful, continuous commitment to certain types of activities. And with practice, industriousness can be learned. Mm-hmm. So that's where she's saying you need to see a connection between effort and rewards so you're not defaulting to laziness.
Interesting.
So...
I'm just thinking of like the little dopamine hits that you get with rewards.
Yeah. And but I mean, that's why people would say to me like, oh, don't bribe them or don't whatever. But I never called it bribing when they had actually done something
right.
appropriate and mm-hmm. they got a sticker mm-hmm. or they got
some recognition,
some kind of recognition for, and I'm a praise person, right? Like I always try to, like fine, even when I was a teacher, I would get kids to be good by saying, oh, look, so-and-so, that group, wow, they're really working well, or so-and-so is mm-hmm. concentrating so much. And look at, you know, and then other kids would want
the praise.
The praise instead of vying for that negative attention. Mm-hmm. And you can get into the, you know, I even, when I babysit sometimes, I think it's like I'll say, oh my goodness, that is just amazing. And they're like, whoa, okay, I'll do another one of those because that was amazing.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that that is definitely, you know, I tried to teach that. Right.
But there's also the balance of
yes.
Pointing out when things aren't going
oh,
right.
Oh, and when I say no and somebody's sad about it, well, I guess they're sad because yeah. no is no. Mm-hmm. And that's the boundary part of it, right?
Yeah, exactly. I really like the next part, the hard thing rule.
I know.
Everyone has to do hard things and you need to finish what you start and you pick your hard things.
Yeah.
I love the next one because I'm thinking of my yoga. I'm
yeah. Of
your knitting. I'm thinking yeah. of people that haven't stuck with it for 2 years.
Yeah. Never quit during a tough time.
Yeah. So she says to stick with something yeah. for 2 years. Wow.
So that's the hard thing rule. Mm-hmm. Like. I thought that was, I thought that is a good parenting advice.
Yeah.
Like if I, you know, if your kid's struggling with something, you say, well, today we're like, we're going to follow the hard thing rule when it comes to this.
Yeah.
And you're going to do hard things and you're going to finish what you start and you're going to, you can pick your own hard thing, your mm-hmm. challenge, but once you picked it, we're sticking with
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So yeah. Culture is the shared norms and values of a group of people doing things in a certain way for a certain reason. So she talks a lot about the
having
social
like a culture in a yes, family or a yes. culture in a workplace.
So, yes. Yeah. So like firmness, courage, determination, fierce resolve, like all these things, those are like core values, unconditional respect, support for high standards. Create a vision for yourself and stick with it with discipline and effort. So, you know, you're kind of trying to create a culture within your family or your mm-hmm. group that so that everyone understands what it is.
Yeah.
And our opponent creates challenges that help us become our best selves, the social multiplier. So when you have an opponent, it spurs you on. Mm-hmm. So when you're in a culture like that, if you can get it positive, you can make a lot of gains. Like right. if you can kind of get everybody on board and saying, we're fierce, like we treat people with respect, like, you know, and then people actually will. I had that in classrooms sometimes because mm-hmm. we had such a culture that if someone was mean to somebody, someone else would say, hey, you know, that's mean. We don't treat people like that here.
Yeah.
So you kind of built that. And that's why I loved class meetings and mm-hmm. so that you talked about things and you got kids always clued in to what the culture was.
Right.
But you know that how hard that is in a job, in a work situation, especially the bigger the company or whatever.
The more unionized it is.
Yes. Success is never final and failure is never fatal. It's courage that counts. Language matters. Finish strong. No whining, no complaining, no excuses. Always protect the team. Be early. So that's her kind of like...
Those are her values.
Yes, for the work, for the kind work. Of like the workplace values, which I thought they were very good. Like if you really had those written out, success is never final. Failure is never fatal. It's courage that counts. Language matters. Finish strong. No whining, no complaining, no excuses. Always protect the team.
Nice.
Be early. I love that one. Sebastian would like that, right? Because that was his professor Dutch, right? Yep. Always said, be early. Yep. Do more than it is expected. You can grow grit from the inside out and from the outside in. So the intrapersonal is self-control. And the interpersonal is like emotional intelligence and moral character. And then the intellectual kind of grit that is your curiosity and zest. And so hold fast to interesting and purposeful goals. Genius is working toward excellence ceaselessly with every element of your being.
Wow.
So that's what she calls genius.
Genius.
But I really like this idea that there's kind of three parts to grit. Your own inner self-control, mm-hmm. how you treat others, kind mm-hmm. of, right? Your moral character, and then your brain part, right?
Yeah.
So it almost is like body, mind, and spirit, mm-hmm. right? A little bit different. But anyway, that is Angela Duckworth's book. It's a very interesting read. And like I say, she gives a lots and lots more examples, and I just don't bother.
No, because we're just then, doing the highlights. Otherwise, you don't read the book.
Yeah, no, and it's too long if you do. So on April 15th, when we come back, we're going to be talking about a trip that we're crossing our fingers that we're going to be taking to Victoria, BC.
No,
so
don't say the dates.
We won't say the dates. So hopefully if all goes well and we get on a plane and it all and we're out there, that we will be talking about Victoria, British Columbia.
Yeah.
In our next episode. So thanks for joining us for Grit.
No Room for Phonies, episode 109. What else did you want to say?
I don't know. That's it for tonight.
I raise my intonation to say you're next.
I know. Well, anyway, the book is worth the read.
Is it just Grit or is there a little bit of a subtitle? Yeah,
there was a subtitle. That's why I'm going back to the top here. The Power of Passion and Perseverance. There you go.
I love the alliteration.
The Power of Passion and Perseverance.
Three P's.
So anyway, it's a great book, worth reading. And thanks for joining us for episode 109, No Room for Phonies, Grit.
Good night.